And now, meet the press. The guest is Dr. Chetty Jagan, the first premier of British Guiana, whose recent election created international interest and whose current visit to the United States in search of economic aid has already stirred up much interest. Our panel consists of Tad Zulk of the New York Times, Ted Poston, New York Post, Jack Perkins of NBC News, and Lawrence E. Spivak. And here is our moderator, Ned Brooks.
This is Ned Brooks inviting you to meet the press. Our guest today is Dr. Chetty Jagan, the newly elected and first premier of British Guiana, gateway to South America. During his fight for power, he became one of the hemisphere's most controversial figures. His recent election created international interest, and it became the subject of heated discussion in the United States Senate. And now here's the first question by Lawrence E. Spivak, the permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. Prime Minister, in a speech he made in the U.S. Senate following your election, Senator Thomas Dodd of Connecticut said this about your election. What it means is that international communism has succeeded in establishing its first beachhead on the South American continent. Now, since you're here for economic aid, it seems to me you would want to answer that question. Are you or are you not pro-communist?
Well, Mr. Spivak, let me put it this way. There is a great deal of confusion about this whole question of British Guiana. For instance, the impression over here is that we are moving off from a more or less democratic setup in British Guiana into a dictatorial or communist setup. Well, I want to say that in British Guiana, thus far, we have had anything but a democratic setup. What I am interested in is to set up a democratic regime in British Guiana. I have said so on several occasions. My party has taken the lead in seeing to it that democratic rights, Bill of Rights, are written into our constitution, so that, to put my position very clearly, I would say that I believe, like most Americans, in parliamentary system of democracy. We have enshrined in our constitution a Bill of Rights, which we expect and to honor. All rights, four freedoms, are preserved in this. Even property rights are preserved in this. On the question of communism as such, there is, as you know, a great deal of confusion as to definitions and so forth. All I can say is that, so far as I'm concerned, personal liberties of the Guyanese people and democratic processes will not be sacrificed. I believe, I'm a socialist, I believe in a planned economy, but I can assure you these will not take precedence over the liberties of my people.
Now, do I understand then by what you're saying that you are neither a communist nor a pro-communist, as we understand both words today in relationship to the Soviet Union, in relationship to Chinese, communist China? Is that correct?
Well, I told you what my beliefs are. I believe in parliamentary system of democracy and the methods which are adopted in democratic countries.
Well, now, you say you are a socialist, and you've stated on a number of occasions that you're a Marxist. Will you tell us in what fundamental way, for example, your Marxism differs from the Marxism of communism?
Well, I have been a student of people like Professor Lasky. I've been greatly influenced by his writings. And in this sense, I have said on several occasions that I believe in Marxism. I'm a socialist in the sense that I believe that the means of production should be in the hands of the state. Public ownership of the means of production, exchange and distribution, which will result in a greater distribution of wealth in favor of the poor, and also which will mean the participation of the people themselves in the whole process of government, in the administration, in factories, in other levels of government.
Mr. Prime Minister, you seem to be avoiding a direct answer on some of these questions. The communists of the Soviet Union insist that they're Democrats also, that theirs is a real democracy. What we would like to get, and what is important, I think, for the people in this country to know, is where you stand on some of these issues, because you have been quoted as saying from some of your speeches in the past, for example, my idea was to show the members of this council that in theory, socialism and communism are the same. And that's why I ask you, where do you stand on this fundamental division in the world today between communism and Western democracy?
Well, can we put it this way, that there is, in my view, a division between politics and economics. In the political field, my objective, obviously, is national independence for my country. In the political field, I am dedicated to parliamentary democracy. In the economic field, I do not believe in capitalism. I do not believe that free enterprise, which may have been very wonderful for, say, United States of America, will, in present-day circumstances, develop either my country or underdeveloped country in the world generally. I feel that in countries such as this, in the economic realm, there must be, perforce, a great deal of planning, government taking a bold hold of the economy of the country, well, so that they can move forward.
Will you
now,
then,
in the question, in the Soviet bloc as such, there is a planned economy. In this sense, I'm interested in what is happening there, as I'm interested in what is happening everywhere. Even in this country, economists now are concerned about this question of rate of growth, as you know.
Well, do you believe that there is freedom in the Soviet Union and in communist China, which is the big issue? Do you believe that there is freedom there and that you will have, and do you say that you will have in your country eventually the same kind of freedom?
Well, all I can say, I haven't been to China, I haven't been to Russia, but the experts who have been there, who have said, for instance, you have this chap who is a writer on this question, an expert apparently, who writes for the London Observer. I can't recall his name right now, but he has said in his latest book that life in the Soviet Union is growing day by day better and better. Standards of living are improving, and as such, we are concerned, we want to know how this is done.
I'm talking about freedom, Mr. Prime Minister. Do you believe that there is freedom of speech in the Soviet Union, freedom of worship in the Soviet Union, and freedom as we understand it in Western democracy? Do you believe that?
Well, freedom of worship, as I'm told, there is. In fact, I saw a picture when Nehru visited the Soviet Union, which showed him visiting one of the outer regions.
You believe there's freedom of press and freedom of speech?
Well, I can't say fully that there is the freedom in the way we understand it in the West.
We'll continue the questions with Mr. Schultz.
Well, Mr. Prime Minister, now that British Guiana is approaching the point of independence, how do you visualize the development of British Guiana socially and economically? How do you plan to guide the development of your country in terms of general development? How do you visualize its relationship to the inter-American system, to the United States, and how, in your view, the Cuban phenomenon, the presence of the Cuban Revolution so close to your shores, may or may not affect the economic and political development of British Guiana?
Well, you've asked me quite a mouthful there. However, I can say, Mr. Schultz, that my country is kept backward today because it has been dominated by colonialism, not only politically but also economically. Independence will give us the right to fashion our economy in the way I feel it should be done, so that the standards of living of the people can be raised. This means going in for a balanced industrial and agricultural development. At the moment, our economy rests on two products, sugar and bauxite. 80% of the exports of our country comes from these two products. We obviously, for sound theoretical and practical reasons, must go in for industrialization. And I want to have a fully blown development program which will be carefully balanced in terms of what will go towards agriculture, what will go towards industry and communications and social development, so that we in due course will be able to generate our own wealth for our own future development. The present method of development in British Guiana, I cannot see, will get us out of the rut of poverty and insecurity. As regards the future relationship with Latin America, I can say that I feel that we will take our place in the hemisphere, coordinating our activities with what is taking place in Latin America and North America. I have already seen to it that my country is associated to the Economic Commission for Latin America. I attended the last conference in Chile early on this year. And as regards future relationships, particularly keeping what is happening in Cuba, I feel that all of us must keep in mind what is taking place in all countries. My feeling is that we have to learn from what is taking place in every part of the world, take the best what is going, and adopt it to suit our peculiarities and our particular circumstances.
When British Guiana does gain independence, is it your plan to take her out of the British Commonwealth, make her into a republic, or maintain the ties with the Commonwealth?
No, we have always said that we propose to have independence, political independence, within the British Commonwealth of Nations, or the Commonwealth of Nations, as it's now called. Even if we become a republic, as India is, we will still be a member of the Commonwealth of Nations.
Mr. Poston.
Mr. Prime Minister, the New York Times quoted you as saying in the lecture you gave here Friday that political independence is a worthless thing and a mirage if it is not accompanied by economic independence. You've said that you're going to ask for independence as soon as possible, political independence from England. Or is the economic position of Guiana such that political independence there wouldn't be a mirage at this time?
Yes, I would say that, because there is, as I said before, 80% of our economy represented by two products, and both of these industries are in foreign hands, which means a great outflow of capital every year. Taking over long-term period, there may be a greater net outflow of capital compared with what is coming in. Now, this is the picture generally of most countries, underdeveloped countries. If you take South America, if you take Asia, Africa. In Latin America, for instance, in the 10-year period, the decade 1945 to 54, there was a net outflow of capital amounting to about $3.5 billion. In 1 year, 1954, Latin America was borrowing approximately a little over $500 million and was paying out precisely the same amount in interest and capital on loans which were made previously. Now, if this sort of thing goes on, you will not have development, and this is what I'm concerned about. In other words, if we have money, if we have help and assistance from outside, we must be free to put it, after we have been scientifically advised how to spend it, on the sectors which will generate wealth more rapidly, so that we don't have all the time to go and borrow money from outside.
Well, you've indicated that you wanted some financial help from American and Canadian sources. You still wish that?
Certainly.
Well, what kind of help would you like, and why do you think that they should invest in Guinea?
Well, I would like the United States and Canada, indeed every government which is in a position to help us to put our economy in a sound position, not because they owe us anything, but because the gap in living standards today between the rich and the poor countries is getting wider, and this is resulting in unrest, social unrest on an international scale. This is resulting in revolutions and upheavals and unrest and all the associated things which go with that. With the result, I think, that it is in the interest of countries, the developed countries, like United States of America, England, and so on, to help people like us so that we get, not only from a sort of point of view that this is good for us, it is also good for the developed countries, because the more we develop, there will be more demands for manufactured goods, for plant and equipment, and so forth.
Mr. Perkins.
Dr. Jagan, I would like to pick up two statements you have made in the past and ask you about your current feelings on them. First, in a victory speech in Georgetown after your election August 21st, you said that the only struggle which should remain in your country is the struggle between the exploiters and the exploited. You also in the past have suggested you might be willing or eager to nationalize industry in British Guiana. How do you feel on those now?
Well, there are a few industries owned, as I said before, by private enterprise. The major industries are owned by private enterprise. We have already taken over one industry, that is the electricity undertaking. This was done on the basis of agreement, discussions with the owners. We have paid compensation for this. We have said also that in terms of British Guiana's position today, which needs vast sums of money and great effort to develop, that our hands will be full for some time to come with this new sector of development. And therefore, we are not concerned about the nationalization of sugar and bauxite. But as a sovereign country, when we become independent, like India and other countries, we reserve the right to nationalize, and we will pay adequate fair compensation should we exercise our sovereign right to nationalize. This is our point of view. In other words, for the time being, we don't see the necessity to nationalize. The British Guiana is an underdeveloped country. While sugar and bauxite play the major role, indeed dominate the economy, in the future, when British Guiana is developed, this will be a tiny, insignificant sector, in my view.
Well, now, Booker's Limited, a British company, owns 80% of sugar, which is your main product. Indeed, Booker's owns a lot in your country. It's been suggested perhaps your country should be called Booker's Guiana.
Right.
But do you think that if, when the time comes, you decide to nationalize Booker's, the sugar industry, do you think you can keep in business? Booker's claims that it wouldn't be in business at all in sugar if the British government weren't subsidizing the price of sugar. If Britain decided not to subsidize it, what would you do?
Well, if you're a member of the Commonwealth, and the Commonwealth doesn't disintegrate if Britain doesn't scuttle it in the meantime by joining the common market, then I see no reason why the same conditions shouldn't apply, whether Booker's own it or it's owned by the government or the people of British Guiana.
You think the Commonwealth would be scuttled if Britain joined the common market?
Well, this is my feeling, yes.
Mr. Spivak.
Well, Mr. Prime Minister, I don't mean to hold you to something you said in 1953, but I would like to check whether you still believe that. In a speech you made before the Legislative Council on February 27th of 1953, you said this, or you were quoted as saying this: "Those who know anything about economic theory know that communism, according to the definition of Marx, Engels, Lenin, and Stalin, is only the advanced stage of socialism. My idea was to show the members of the Council that in theory, socialism and communism are the same." Do you still believe that?
Well, if I may elaborate that a little, I would like to say that from what I've read from the textbooks, socialism means, or the slogan under socialism is that from each according to his ability, to each according to his labor, the work that he gives. Under communism, as under early Christian setup, all persons were supposed to share equally. And so I see the communists say that in that period to come, There will be distribution according to needs. Each one will contribute according to his ability. And from my point of view, this is good. This is a good thing that all persons should get from society what he needs, regardless of whether he's a cripple or whether he is able to produce more or less. This, I believe, you will believe in too, because I'm sure you don't agree that some people should own vast sums of money and others should be wallowing in poverty that you have in many countries today. The terrible distribution of wealth. Even in my country, if you study the statistics, you will find in most capitalist countries, you find the same thing. Unequal, very unequal distribution of wealth. You have conspicuous consumption of those who are wealthy, with the result they dissipate the surplus of the country and nothing is there for development.
Well, Mr. Prime Minister, do you believe that in the communist countries today, the Soviet Union, there is equal distribution of wealth? That Mr. Khrushchev, for example, lives exactly the same as the poorest peasant? Do you think there is equality of distribution?
No, I don't say that there is, but the communists have made it a basic tenet of their philosophy.
Their words?
That they feel that the system of capitalism is an evil. This is what they say. Yes. Capitalism, of course, doesn't necessarily mean, or rather, a man being earning more than another doesn't necessarily mean that he's the capitalist. You have a worker working in a state factory. In my electric enterprise, which is nationalized, you have some workers earning more than others. But this doesn't make them capitalists.
Mr. Prime Minister, I think a few minutes ago you said that you have a constitution and your constitution provides and protects your people, provides liberty and freedom and protects your people. I assume you're planning to live up to your constitution.
Of course.
Now, in your recent official biography, it states that you are in favor, and I quote, of the fundamental rights of citizens, including right to private property, along the lines established in the Federal Constitution of the USA. And yet, if I remember, a few minutes ago, you said you plan to nationalize the sugar industry and probably the lumber industry and...
Let me correct you. I said that we do not have plans to nationalize. We do not intend to nationalize the sugar and the bauxite industry, major industries. But I said, as a sovereign country, we have the right and we reserve the right, should we want to do so, to nationalize. This is a right which every country has.
But in a book you wrote in 1954, you definitely said you would nationalize.
Well, at the present time, having looked at the situation very comprehensively, I don't see the necessity right now. As I said, our hands will be full with the further development of British Guiana.
Mr. Schultz.
Dr. Jagan, in terms of the future development of British Guiana, do you feel that British Guiana should confine herself in cooperating and receiving aid from the Inter-American system, participating in the Alliance for Progress, or do you feel that she should as well go and look for assistance on trade in the rest of the world, specifically in the Soviet Union and in the Soviet bloc? Do you see Soviet bloc as a potential customer for your sugar?
Well, I'm sure the Soviet Union has its hands full with Cuban sugar at the moment. But as regards the Inter-American bloc and the Alliance for Progress, I've already said that we are prepared to join the OAS. In fact, I have made approaches, and they have told me, well, you can't join, you're not independent. Come back when you're free. As regards the Alliance for Progress, I agree with Senator Kennedy, with the President Kennedy's tenets that aid should be given to all these countries once they are prepared to go in for a program of social and economic reform. This is what I am prepared to do. In British Guiana, you all are invited to come, and some of you have come. You will know that we have a democratic regime, free from corruption, free from nepotism, and we intend to go in for a full-blooded program of social and economic reform.
Gentlemen, we have about 2 minutes. Mr. Postman.
Well, Dr. Jagan, to get to politics for a moment, Sidney King, who's head of the African Society for Racial Equality in Guiana, is charged in letters to the UN, to the U.S., that your election was really a numerical triumph of Indians over Negroes in your country. Is there any truth in that? Was the election settled on strictly racial lines?
This is not true, because while obviously there is some bit of racialism in the country, but the fact is that the crucial point about the election was to be decided on three constituencies which were marginal. And in those constituencies, they were definitely a non-Indian majority. In other words, Indians, they claim that I only fight for Indians and I only get the support of Indians. This is not true. My support comes from the working class people, predominantly Indians and Africans. And in these three constituencies, we won, where there was definitely an Indian minority. And we don't fight for Indians. Indeed, in the opposition party, there was an Indian who was a landlord, whom we opposed for many, many years. If you look at the composition of our legislative council, for instance, our legislative assembly, you will see that of the 35 members there, a minority only are Indians. For instance, there are only 19 or 16 out of 35 in the Senate and House of Assembly combined, legislative assembly combined. You will find 19 Indians only. So that it's not true when Sidney King says that Indians dominating the political scene in British Guiana. This is not true.
Mr. Perkins, short question.
Dr. Jagan, your wife, who in Chicago was recorded to be a member of a Communist Front organization, had been until August 21st a member of your government. She is not now, I understand. Why?
Oh, well, we're putting other people to try them out, to give them experience. After all, in colonial countries, backward countries, we need not only skilled technicians, but we need skilled politicians, and we want to have more people to put their hands behind
them. Gentlemen, at this point, we'll have to suspend our questions, and thank you very much, Dr. Jagan, for being with us.
Thank you, Ned Brooks. More details about Meet the Press in just a moment.
Morgan Beatty, recalling one of history's big news stories. July 1776, the Continental Congress proclaimed to the world that the colonies had severed their allegiance to the British crown. Yet it was months before the world heard about the Declaration of Independence. Today, NBC Radio puts you in touch with the big stories within minutes. You follow events as they happen, reported from where they happen throughout the day on NBC Radio News on the Hour.
Even in today's jet age, from the frozen land of Alaska to your home, in a few minutes, is still a scientific marvel. Yet, in approximately that time, the country could be warned of impending enemy attack. A few seconds after hostile planes are identified, North American Air Defense Command is notified. A civil defense warning officer immediately alerts 400 points simultaneously. These warning points then alert every city and community. You received a warning through these signals. A steady blast of 3 to 5 minutes means take action as directed by your local officials. A wailing tone or a series of short blasts lasting 3 minutes means take cover immediately in the best available shelter and stay there until you are told it is safe to leave. For your own safety, learn the warning signals and know what to do if they sound.